Then have got reel 14.
I was saying last time about the fact that I've never been able to come to terms with my father's death. Not only because the fact that he was a father, and because he was a caring man, and a man who always, whenever he could, was always one of the first to help anyone. He would give his shirt away if necessary. Men who had a tremendous zest for life, enjoyed life, men without inhibitions. And above all, a very courageous man. And when people talk about the Holocaust and they ask questions which to them are questions that in a free world seem to be very obvious, but yet to us survivors are very naive questions, and that is, why didn't you fight back? I always think about the way my father used to fight back, because he was taking his own life in his own hands from the very day the Germans came in to our town. He didn't just sit back and relied on fate. He didn't just say, right, well, there's nothing we can do about it. We have to hope that we're going to survive, and that will be it. And what's more, he did not fight like an idiot would fight, to try and get a gun and go out and shoot so that he would be shot. He was, on the one hand, he was thinking about how to preserve his family. After all, he had a wife and he had three young children, and he had family, and also he had responsibility to everybody else, because to go out and to shoot a German was equivalent to asking for 100 people to be killed, because the German reaction to the killing of one German was immediate retribution, which was at least 100-fold for every German, if not more, and it was very indiscriminate. So it wasn't very clever to take a gun and shoot and to go and kill a German. But above all, when one thinks about this period, the Germans were rewarded for killing Jews, and for that matter, to kill any of the people whom they subjugated, whether they were Jews or they were Gentiles. But with Jews more so, because they knew that they're not going to be punished for it. And of course, they had to do it in order to show an example that that others should not rise against them. But then, then one has to think about the fact that there were no weapons about available. That as Jews, we were living in a we were part of the country. We had Polish citizenship, but we were not part of the population, because the Polish population looked down upon us, and they were not prepared to help in any way. So we were really left to our own devices. The whole world completely forsook us, abandoned us. And we were left to our own devices to learn how to survive. And my father was precisely that kind of a person who understood the meaning of survival. He knew that fighting with a weapon, even if he could get a weapon, would not help anything. To him, survival meant to be able to live from day to day and to be able to look after his family, to sustain them with the food, because that was our immediate need, and for a little bit extra if it was possible, and at the same time also helped many others to be fed, because all the time whilst we were in the camp, he was always finding new ways of smuggling in food. That was taking risks with his own life, because the minute if he were caught, he would have been shot. But he managed to avoid it throughout the whole period that we were in the camp. And no matter how many times the Germans have confiscated food or anything that my father was connected with, he either managed to buy himself out, I don't know how he did it, but he somehow always managed it. He had a way that some people are gifted with, and he had that gift. And what's more, when everything was confiscated, he would, from nothing, create once again. He was a typical entrepreneur, just like he was before the war, a successful businessman. So during the war, he was a successful smuggler, if one can put it that way. And in the world that we live in today, I mean, he would have been really flourishing to an extent that it would have been remarkable. By the time when he was killed, when he ran away, he was no more than about 37, 38 years old, about that age. So he had a lot to live for. And on top of it, I survived, and my younger sister survived. So he had his children to look after. And so it was really a great loss as a human being, as a father. And to me, he was always a great hero, and that is how he will remain as long as I live. And I'll always see him the way he was, a young man, very alert, always on the move, and irrepressible, and indomitable, and in spirit. And with a gift for being intrepid, in a way, when I think about it now, I'm just wondering how he could have possibly have done all this. So there are many kinds of heroisms that one encounters in life, especially during the war and under stress. And to me, his kind of heroism was the finest, because he did never kill anyone. He was helping other people to live. And as such, his achievements were really very, very solid and great. Obviously, as a rule, one always extols one's parents' gifts, and one always thinks very highly of one's parents. But, and I haven't said very much about my mother, not because my mother, there isn't much for me to say about my mother, because my mother was a wonderful woman as well. As a mother, one could not wish to have a better mother in terms of devotion and an application to the way she brought us up and how she thought about us. But I haven't talked so much about my mother because, first of all, I don't know whether this is part of what I need to tell. My father's story is more part of the whole struggle and survival which he himself was participating, and that is why I have specially highlighted it, and that is why I always feel even more so the loss of it. So that does not diminish the loss that I feel when I heard that my mother was killed. Anyway, I said that I didn't come to terms as far as my father's death is concerned. That is only true, sort of looking at it on one side, but obviously I had to come to terms with myself that I am now on my own, really on my own. And whilst I was crying and really saw the end of the world when I heard about my father's death, at the same time, I was 15 years old and I was beginning to realize that I must come to terms with the fact, the reality that he is dead, and therefore I have to do something about it. And this is where being young means so much, because young people are that much more resilient. And just like I have shown resiliency in everything else during the war, like so many other boys, I was not the only one. And I showed resiliency later on in life. I immediately, after a couple of days, I thought, whilst I had in the forefront of my mind, I couldn't get rid of the thought that I won't see my father anymore. At the same time, I was already thinking about what's next? What's going to happen now? What am I going to do? Of course, at this stage, it was all very, very vague, because we were liberated finally on the night of the 8th to the 9th of May. And this was, of course, on the day when the Germans have capitulated. But Czechoslovakia was the one part of Europe which really was the last one to be liberated. In fact, when the armistice was signed, capitulation was signed, whole parts of Czechoslovakia were still in German hands. And Prague itself was taken on the very same morning of this, when we were liberated, the Russians went straight through. In fact, the Czechs in Prague rose against the Germans, and just before the Russians came in, part of Prague was already liberated by them, and they killed quite a lot of Germans. Most of Czechoslovakia was taken by the Russians, and equally we were liberated by the Russians. With the Russians always came the liberating Czech forces, those who escaped to Russia, and they formed a liberation force, Czech Liberation Army, and General Svoboda, who later became a president of Czechoslovakia, and also took a very important part in 1968 in the spring 1968 movement of changing Czechoslovakia. I mean, he saved Dubček's life later on. But at that stage, he was only a general. He was a communist who ran away, and he became a general, and he was part of the liberating forces. The Czech partisans at that stage also became much more active. The partisan movement really became very strong as the Germans were retreating and the Germans were losing. This happened in Poland, and this happened in Czechoslovakia, it happened elsewhere. As long as the Germans were winning and they were deep in Russia and they were the masters of the whole of Europe, whilst there was an underground movement everywhere, the underground movement was really lying low and very passive. Because at that stage, the underground movement wasn't really strong enough. They were very worried whether the population would support them. And the German retribution against any killings was so violent that it was very difficult to get support from the local population altogether. But with the Germans retreating, the momentum increased. The momentum of partisan activity also increased. And by the time of the liberation in May 1948, the Czech part of the movement was very strong. I'm dwelling on this for a specific reason, you see, because Theresienstadt was on the edge of what used to be called Sudetenland, a part of Czechoslovakia which was mainly populated by German-speaking people, and for which the Germans made excuses that they wanted to take Czechoslovakia when they first asked for Sudetenland, because they said Sudetenland was part of Germany. And of course, the Sudeten Germans were very much in favor of being annexed by the Germans and very much in favor of supporting Hitler. And when the Germans came into Sudetenland, they treated the Czechs, the minority Czech population, very badly, and they received the Gestapo and Hitler's army with open hands. Now it was the turn of the Czechs. They have never forgotten what the Czechs did, and they were taking their revenge. And one of their first policies was to get rid of the Sudeten Germans. And they immediately ordered them out of their homes. They kicked them out. And they took, of course, the activists they took out, and they either killed them instantly or they drowned them in the river. In the river, there was a very large river, the Laba, which was a tributary to the Vltava or to the Danube. Very large, the second largest river in Czechoslovakia, passing through Lettland. So these Germans were now very badly treated. Many were drowned, not only the activists, but a lot of innocent Germans were drowned. And the Czechs caused such havoc that the Germans simply were taking whatever they could, the belongings they could, and they were running away. Now, when we were liberated, and let me say something about the liberation. I was just sort of recovering, if one can call it recovering, from the impact of the news about my father. And at the same time, of course, we were told that we are being liberated, that we're going to be liberated. And again, there were rumors flying all the time. I said the Americans are five miles away, then the Russians were 5 miles away. And for the sort of the last two or three nights before liberation, I simply didn't go to sleep, because I wanted to be there to see what it was like to be liberated, to feel free again. And somehow that night, when the night of the 8th of the 9th, I must have felt very, very tired, and I went to lie down. About 6 o'clock, seven, about 6 o'clock in the morning, a friend of mine came up to me and said, get up, we are free. And I looked at him and I sort of said to him, no, it can't be, you know, because we've already heard this before, the day before. He says, no, we are free, come on, you'll see. And I said, really? I jumped up and I ran out and everybody was, I could see people running in all directions, they saying, we liberated, and they were rejoicing. And I sort of felt a kind of an anticlimax, because I was waiting so much for this day, and all that happened was that I was told that I'm free. At this particular moment, nothing really has changed from what was happening to me in the last few days. Other than now, I was told that I am really free. So it really did not yet penetrate, didn't dawn on me now what freedom is, because I obviously looked so much forward to it, and I expected something. I don't know what I expected, but here I was. All I knew, I was told that I was free, and yet, ostensibly, nothing has really changed. I was still living and sharing my bunk with my friend and with many others in the same room, and somehow it somehow did not register, nothing registered. But then I was told, look, we can get out and we are free to get out to do what we like, and we have got one day in which we can do whatever we want. We can rob, we can kill, take revenge, whatever we want. So I was quite by this stage I was reasonably recovered, not because I had all that much more food, but simply because I hadn't been working for 3 weeks.
Was more food brought into the camp at this
not
time
at that moment not at that moment not at that moment and I was feeling stronger every day as I was there in Theresienstadt. I was sleeping well, I was relaxing more, and on the whole, I didn't feel any after effects, any effects from what I said. My recovery seemed to have been very quick before it even started. In this respect, I was very, very lucky, because that was not the case with the majority of people, because somehow they were affected in such a way that it took them a long time before they were really they had strength to run out. Anyway, the nearest town to Theresienstadt was a place called Leitmeritz, and this was already in Sudetenland. It was only a mile away, and all the Germans were being chased out, and they were going in the direction of Theresienstadt. So on the way, there were hundreds, thousands of inmates going towards Leitmeritz or another direction, and in the other direction were the Germans coming. And of course, where the Germans were coming, they were stopped by the inmates, and the inmates, whatever they could take away from them, would take away from them. And the Russians didn't intervene at all, because they said, this is our day of revenge. What we can do, what we want to do, we can do, as I mentioned earlier. And as I was walking, suddenly I saw two young women who obviously were, we didn't know this, but there was another camp not far away with women. And they had all shaved, their hair was shaved off. And there were two sisters, apparently, I discovered only later on, that they were about, couldn't have been more than about 20, between 20 and 25 years old. And they were beating up a German woman. She had next to her a little boy and a pram with a baby there. And they were, as they were beating her up, the boy, the little boy was crying and the baby was crying. And when I saw it, I really felt for the little boy and for the baby's cry. And the woman was saying, I'm innocent. I had nothing to do with Hitler. And the women were shouting and screaming and beating. And I really, I had tears in my eyes because I was affected by the crying of the boy especially. And I ran up to them and I said, "Stop it!" And they looked at me and says, "Why?" I said, "Look, she's got a child. She's got a baby. How can you do it?" They say, "What do you mean? How could they kill them, all my family? We've got nobody left. They've killed all our family. They had no pity on us. Why should we have pity?" I said, "I don't know, but how can you? You can't. The child is crying. It's a mother. You can't do it." And they started shouting at me, and they said, "What do you mean? How can you defend them? You can't do it." So I said, "No, you're not going to do anything anymore." They said, "No." So I said, "Right, now if you don't stop it, I'll stop you." I said, "You try." Well, I got hold of the two of them and I threw them in the ditch. You know, the roads in the continent have got ditches on the sides. And I told her, the woman started thanking me, and I was really crying at that stage, really crying volubly, you know. I just couldn't stand the whole thing. And I turned around and said, don't thank me, because I really am torn apart. I understand I feel the same what these women feel, yet I find that I can't do anything to you, because I'm looking at your son, and I can see my little sister, who was no older than your son. And the Germans had no pity on her. They shot her in cold blood, together with 520 other people. They didn't think about it. But I can't. I said, "I can't. Just go." I said, "Go quickly." And the women sort of came out. They went for me. And again, I sort of fought them off. I was very strong. I always was very strong. And at that time, I don't know how I got all these things, but somehow it was there. And so again, I said to them, "Look, I don't want to fight you. I don't, especially your girls. I don't like fighting girls." And I pushed them in again, and they were shouting and screaming at me. And then I sort of made sure that woman went off. And I sort of went away. It made a very deep imprint on me, that particular episode. And it's still now, when I think about it and I see this whole scene, I feel like crying, because I can see the tragedy of mankind in it, in a way. I mean, how this chain of revenge, how it never stops, you know.